might start with one that might be a little cosmological, but...
Those are more fun.
You have made the statement that there is no such thing as time, especially on your side, that we created here. But you have mentioned the fact also that there is change, there is progress on your side, that the Christ, for instance, in 2,000 years had gone on to greater heights. And to us, time is a measure of change. And can you clarify this in any way for us?
Well, I'll try.
Okay.
All right. I think basically the one idea, and it is only an idea in one's mind, that stops you from totally understanding and experiencing what that is about is this. When on the so-called other side, whatever that might mean to you, when we speak of change, be aware of one thing. We're not talking about going from one cluster of moment, that doesn't bother me, one cluster of moment to another. We are talking about a state of extension. And extension to you, the closest word that I can merge with your awareness and come up with that might then make us have some groundwork that we can touch together, is change. What it really is a state of extending. Now, when you say extension, you mean that you're moving, you're going to extend your road from point A to point B. Therefore, you're going to move. And you usually think of that in terms of, well, it'll take so many hours to go from this point to that point. So in your mind, when I say extension, immediately your mind moves into the thought of time. Now, when I speak of the Christos as having changed, as having increased his awareness, all I am saying is, if you can only understand, I mean that that which is his own awareness of the vastness is ever extending, ever expanding. What you have today is not what you will have tomorrow. And it isn't a matter of time. It is a matter of expansion. You can spend the whole rest of your time life and you will not expand at all. Do you understand? Expansion and time movement are not the same thing. To say that simply because you're going to live another 50 years means you will be expanded in 50 years, that may be so, but my dear friends, it may not be so. You may stay exactly where you are. So, when we speak of extension, we're just speaking of, if I could use this analogy, of a movement within your being that seems to you today you are this size, you are this physical body size. In 2 years, it seems to you as you sit in your meditation or walk down the road somehow, you're as big as your living room. And you really will perhaps feel this, that somehow your boundaries have expanded and now things are a little vaster. I hope I don't hit you, excuse me. And then the next, within 2 years, perhaps then it goes even further than that. Do you understand? It's a matter of extension. Now, it really is not a matter of your eyes extending. It is a matter of when you quiet yourself, when you quiet yourself and become very still, it is a matter of experiencing within your being a lack of limitation. Could I put it that way? A lack of limit. That your limits seem to have moved further away from you. That while today you found it very difficult to embrace your husband or your wife in deep understanding, perhaps in a year's time that will no longer be the case, and to see his face will bring up, or her face, a moment of expanded awareness, and one knows that one has dropped all of the residue of past difficulties and has accepted the situation exactly the way it is, and in that moment, you drop your limits. If you want to ask me the way to move into maximum expansion through your daily life, I always say, one, please meditate, but you've heard that so often it becomes nauseous. But number two, to take absolutely every instant, every obstacle, every confrontation, every awareness that happens in your life and stay with it. Do not wish to change it one iota. Not one. Not one. Simply say, so it is. So it is. And be, if you can, be joyful in that. And that is the hard part, my friend. To be joyful in that statement. This is the way it is, and so what? Accept. So, boundaries begin to drop if your mind can stop saying, I want to change it, I want it different. You know, it's so simple a thing, and yet it is so difficult a thing. The best way to expand to the infinite is to simply say, I will not ask for one change. not even in my limited consciousness, because you see, that's the last trap, isn't it? You say, well, I will not ask for any change except please take away my limited consciousness. And there again, we have another, if not the last, of the residue of a limitation. So, when we speak of time, it is a mental construct that has to do usually with moving through this morass from one event to another, to another, to another. And it is something that you have constructed out of your own mind stuff, because it doesn't make any sense to live in this kind of world without time. Truly, it doesn't make any sense. You cannot work this world unless you have time. How can we say we will meet at 7? How can we do that if we don't have time? Now, what is then the difference? And this is truly cosmological. What is then the difference on the other levels? Let us say that all of a sudden we've all transcended the body awareness. We're all what you call dead and what I call alive. And we are now moving wonderfully and creatively through the vastness to our appointed destiny. All right. And let's say that we want to meet. Let's say that we would like to have a communion of our particular brand of essence. All right? Because there still is a brand of essence, you know, that, well, never mind, but there is. Let's just leave it at that. And let's say that this whole group decides how wonderful to renew and drink from each other's essence once again. All right. Do we have to say, well, let's all meet at 7 o'clock and we'll hover over Dr. Aiken's house down on the earth plane and all this business? No. The absolute, what you would call thinking, what I would call extension of the desire has it happen. It is just simply, and desire isn't the right word because that is another word that you equate with other things. Let us just say an upwelling of wanting this to happen brings its response, and so then it occurs. Now, are you going to say that everybody will come? No. And I want to make this very clear. It is a mistake to think that when you move to the other side, that all of you are going to move to the same states of awareness, the same planes of reality, and all of this business. It's simply not true. The reason I bring this out is, I don't think it has to do with anyone here, but there are those of you who listen to the tapes who have a deep-seated fear of dying because of fear of meeting someone that you had a very, very negative experience with on the earth plane. This is often what happens when people come to me, especially some of the elderly who are ready to die, but someone who they've had just a frightening relationship with that they did not reconcile before their death, and they come and they say, I'm afraid. I feel like I want to go, but I cannot go, because I don't want to see whoever. And the answer is very clear, my friend. Two things I will state, and this is totally cosmological. One, if it is necessary that you meet them, you will do so, and it will not be the terrifying thing that you expect it to be, because everything will be seen from a different perspective. And second, if it is not to your maximum benefit, you will not meet them anyway. I would like to say that because many people come and ask this very question. It simply doesn't matter. You can't avoid bumping into each other on the earth plane, but there are ways and means on the other realms where that kind of thing, unless it is maximum help to you, you don't have to worry about it. So I put that in. Are there any questions about time? Please. Ask something and perhaps I can. It is the most difficult thing to explain. It is the most single difficult thing to explain to you. The other difficult thing is space. Because, you see, the thing that you see as space, I see as full. The thing that you see empty, which is space, I see filled. You see, everything is sort of in a reverse situation for
us.
What's
it filled with?
That's what I want you to find out, my friend. That is the maximum thing to find out. This is why at the beginning of our relationship with all of you, I said, please, if you really wish to make maximum progress, the thing to do during your daily round is to be aware of outer and inner space, because it will give up its secret to you, because it is not what it appears to be. Just as you are not what you appear to be, neither is space. And so, when you keep your awareness on something, you know, your mind cannot play very much with space. It's only so much you can say about it. And then you just have to accept it as it is. Now, humans, oh my, what a wonderful time we can have. I don't like the color of the shirt. I don't, you know, we can go on and on. So, space gives of its secret to the one who ponders it, inner or outer space. I will tell you this. All of the levels of awareness, the way they say that you have access to the vast reaches of the cosmos. The reason that they say that is that impinging directly, absolutely, and totally upon this space, my friend, not Neptune, this space, are all of the webs and the interwovenness of consciousness. And it is all here. You do not have to go to Neptune to visit the Christos. You don't have to go to, I don't know, what other one, what do you ever name, Saturn to visit the Buddha. You know, it isn't like that. It's all here. It is all, and this is why a great master, when he dies, he will say, where could I go? Where am I going to go? You know, in your mind, here we come to time again. Space, travel. If you're dead and I can't see you, well, then you're gone. Well, the fact is, that is not true. Now, there's a great deal of fear involved in this idea that space is alive. But space is alive. And my friends, I will tell you quite frankly that space is more alive than the density of the physical body in some very wondrously freeing way. So, you ask me what is in space, I say to you, my friends, spend a year looking and you will come up with some answers of your own so that your experience will be much more total and true. I could make a lot of stories for you, but I would like you to simply find out for you. Because therein lies a great deal of the answer. You don't have to go anywhere. I keep saying it. You don't have to go anywhere to understand any of this. It's much more glamorous to think about it, having to go to the, what? Where do you think of you going? To heaven. Heaven, that's a good one. You're all going to die and go to heaven. Well, what an awful surprise to wake up and find out that it was all here. Totally different, totally transformed. Yes, I agree with you. But it isn't that you're going to go flying, you know, 20,000 light years and never mind. But just stay calmly and quietly and poised with all of your power in this moment, being aware of this space, and you will begin to see and feel changes and great excitement. Have I left out anything about time? Yes.
The subject of aging seems related to time, and I wonder if you might have some comments on that while you're on the subject of time.
I can always count on you to ask maximum questions. Thank you. All right. If you, with your mind, had not so constructed the game to be an aging process, it would not be. On other levels of awareness, on different planets, so to speak, on different stratas of awareness and consciousness and so forth, this process does not go on. The body forms don't look like this. The so-called aging process does not take place. Different things happen. Changes of a different kind happen. For example, and this is truly cosmological, the form itself just gets larger and larger and larger and larger. And that's what they call, what you would call aging. It has nothing to do, you see how complicated. But all of these are limited ideas based on a form that does something. Either gets older or gets smaller or gets whatever is the current operating game plan on that state of awareness. And there are as many planets, there are all game plans everywhere. As long as there is form, my friend, as long as there is form of any definitive type, you are going to have some kind of an operative idea in mind. So, if you had not structured it so, then age would not be the situation. But believe me, something else would be. So, why not take what it is? It's just fine. It works as well as any of the others. You know, what I try to get through over and yet again and again is it is the mind that has built your definition of reality, and therefore, because you are creators, you have created it thusly. On other levels of awareness, it's different. But this is the game plan, and you're stuck with it. Yes?
Am I stuck with, if I could get free of that mental concept or construct, am I still stuck with the collective construct?
Well, that's a good question. Oh, yes. The question is this. Is someone who is trying to be free of that mental construct, is there a way to be free of it, or does the mass pull of the thought form hold you to it? My answer is yes and no. There are those, and again, I can just hear the people hearing this tape say, oh my, what humbug, but I will go ahead with it. There are so-called physical entities on the earth plane in various parts of the world who have come to understand that it's simply mind over matter and have been able to do mind over matter, and for various inner reasons, usually service, the Bodhisattva ideal, have chosen to stay in body form in order to extend their type of understanding into the mental world of man. They may not have much connection with man in body form, but their mind stuff goes out and they have a tremendous effect on the balance of the earth plane. So the answer is yes, but I would have to tell you that these are very rare entities. And usually what happens is that when you've seen that far through the game, you say, well, thank you very much, goodbye. I'll just take my game and go someplace else. That's usually what happens. Because you see, you can help if you stay in a body form. There are certain things that you can do. But it is also equally true that those who wish to serve the planet do not necessarily have to always take physical body to do it. We've talked about this before. You don't have to be in physical form to help the planet and so forth. But there's no doubt, you heard all these stories, and they're all true about the yogi who drinks the poison and it doesn't affect him. Well, because why? He knows. Mind over matter, he knows. He simply says, oh, this isn't poison, and in his mind transmutes it into something quite different, perhaps something he enjoys, and he drinks it and nothing happens. Everybody goes, oh, amazing. No, it's not amazing. Mind over matter. Mind over matter. You're not stuck with it in the truest sense, no. But the fact is, my friend, it takes a great deal of energy and a great deal of awareness to do that. The man who walks over the water, you know, the old story, he walks across the river and then they say, well, why, when it takes 2 pennies to go, did you waste all your time? Same kind of thing. The answer being that clearly, if that is something one feels very drawn to, then by all means, you may be one of those whose job it is to stay around for 800 years. But then again, maybe you're not. But to say that it is impossible is not true. It is simply not true. To say it is unlikely is to say something else that I think is closer to the truth. Does that answer the question? No limitation has to be kept. None. 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 But as the limitations break down, you make your decision. How to extend? Will you extend this way? Will you extend that way? What will you do? And this will be an old... your own personal choice based on your own inner dharma and how you wish to follow. Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Excuse me,
I'm curious about time on the other side, your side, whatever you want to call it. It has nothing to do, relatively speaking, with time on the earth plane, does it?
No. Time on the other side is not an equal or even likely mirror of time on this side. However, this is one of the most cosmological tapes we've ever done, Doctor. All right, on the other hand, it is also very true to say that on certain levels of this so-called astral world, there is something that meets up, sort of, with your concept of time, especially in the lower astral. And so therefore, if someone dies who has a great yearning to return to the earth plane, and their habits propel them back at a rapid rate, then they have a very close and deep understanding of time and feel very restless with its timelessness. You see, to whatever extent your mind has bought the game is the extent to which you will hold to it on the other side. And sometimes it takes a lot of convincing, and I'm sure you've read all the books, you know, when somebody dies, you know, it does take convincing to free them of their limitations. And some of them absolutely refuse to accept that there is no such thing as time. And those are the ones who usually find a body form as soon as possible and return, because that is the place where they feel the most comfortable. So, I say to you, do your best. Drop them as soon as best you can.
I'd like to know what you have to say about that. Money. This green stuff we deal with here, I don't know what it symbolizes, and I don't want it to be occupy a space in my life of worry or concern or stipulation. I don't want it to limit me. Yet, at the same time, I recognize
its role in the world that I live in right now that I'm focusing on. And I guess I'm in limbo as to how to create that reality of green coming in so I don't limit myself in my actions, yet at the same time not wanting a feeling of selling my soul.
Yes.
Question.
All right, the question is, what about money? How much awareness to give, how much time to give to it, what place it should have in one's life, and so forth. All right. You may not like my answer, but it is thus. The amount of money you have in your life is directly in ratio to the amount of belief that you have in its value. For example, if you feel that money is definitely a necessary commodity and that items can only come to you through money, then you will have to accumulate money. If, on the other hand, you have an opposite idea, which is that there is a lot of everything around, and those things which are needful will come to you, not necessarily through money, but will just simply flow to you, then you have a different concept. For example, if you want a car and you say, the only way I can get a car is to buy it, you're limiting your reality. Because there are many other options, are there not, to get a car? Many other options. But if your mind says, there's only one way to support myself, and that's to get a 9-to-5 job and so forth, then be assured that that is the pattern that you will follow. And this is why all of these questions go back to your own inner being. The place to look is to look within yourself and say, what is my inner belief reality on money? What do I truly believe? Not what does my fantasy say? Not what do I want to believe, but what do I really believe? You know, don't be fooled. Your conditioning has a lot to do with it. Do not mislead yourselves. You are born into a society where money has a definite place. You have been brought up by people who kept talking about money either one way or another. You know, you have a great deal of money input. All of you. And it's all different. There isn't really, I don't think we could say that anybody in here would have a matching concept of money and its use, and oh, it could go on infinitely. So if you have a money problem, whether in whatever way it's manifesting, my answer is simple. Get within your being deeply and deal seriously, not soberly, but seriously, with your own inner feeling of money. What do you think has to be the necessary situation in order for you to have the things that you want? And if your parents said, you know, if you don't work every day, you're not going to get it. And if you don't save it, you don't. You know, there are lots of don'ts, and everybody has them all recorded within their apparatus. It is not a reality. It is something your mind has set in motion. Some people, you know, my friends, never work a day in their life. And they have a great deal of money, more than a lot of you.
How do they do it?
Find out. It is possible. It is possible. It is possible. But you see, my friends, there are lots of work ethics at work in your society. Don't underestimate this. There is what I would call the American work ethic here, and I imagine it's European too. You know, you've got to work, you've got to pay your way, you can't let the state support you. I mean, look at it. Look deeply at what you really think, because it is those concepts that begin to limit you, and then you project them outward. There are many ways to live your life, my friends. Many ways. And if you've come to the place where you don't want to work, where you want another reality to begin happening, you can begin to change things if that's what you want to do. Now, I will tell you utterly and frankly, I do not care if all of you work from 9 to 5 or from 6 to 12 or work all day and all night. I don't care. But I do care very much about one thing, and so let's get this whole talk down to what I consider to be the essence. If you are working or if you are not working, the same thing applies. Where is your awareness? You can make as much, if not more, progress in an intensely difficult work situation than you can sitting on the beaches of Hawaii. I promise you that. And if you continually say to yourself, look, I don't care about this. I'm not going to worry about money. I have only one thrust, only one. I want to be free. I want to be centered and free within my being, and then let it happen whatever way it happens. Then the power within takes you where you need to be, not where your mind tells you you need to be. And that changes the whole thing.
Could you repeat that last sentence?
That was good.
Do you understand the thrust?
Yes.
The thrust is, if you will simply stay in a centered position, the divine power can be counted on to take you to those places and to those situations, either work or not work, that are your maximum destiny. But if you have decided, I do not want to work, or I must work, you are deciding, and you are then pushing the formula. And we have to work with your free will. I've said it before, I must repeat. It is your free will. If you say, I do not believe that money will come to me unless I'm working, then so be it, my dear friends. We are not going to open a goodie bag and drop it on your head. It is your problem. You will have to work. If one day you say, I have decided that I don't care, I'm not going to pay attention to that, I'm going to get within my being, and I'm going to get in the flow of that oneness, then you're going to start feeling another thing. Don't worry about it. My opinion is, please don't worry. If you are what I call surrendered to your life, which means that you are in a position of saying, look, my life's moving, I'm going to move with it, I'm going to stay centered, whatever happens, happens, I'm not going to push things away or grab things to me, I'm simply going to, in your terminology, flow with the reality of my moment, then you can begin to get that sweet sense of knowing that you are being flowed into the right pattern at the right time, and it will end when it's finished, and a new one takes shape, and you go on thusly like the river through its winding banks. But if you have decided what you must do, then you must do it. And there is not anything that we will do to break your pattern. It is your choice. And we will always be ultimately kind to you. It is your desire, and we will go. So, I say only this. The divine power awaits as many of you as possible to surrender the total essence of your life to us so that we can begin to move you in the directions that we know with our own understanding are maximum for you. Do it now or do it later. Some lifetime it must happen that you say, I will put it all down. Fill me with your wisdom and your energy and your love, and I will go and do whatever it is and so forth. When you are filled with divine wisdom, you don't care what you're doing. You just don't care, because it all feels the same. It all feels the same. And it is the feeling tone that lifts you or depresses you. It is how you feel within your being. And if you're alight with the wonder of whatever it is you're doing, and it doesn't have to do with what you're doing, it is the wonder of who you are and what is happening to you in that moment, then we have a totally different situation. Does that answer the question? The problem is not the money. There is no problem at all. There is either centeredness or lack of centeredness. I repeat, there is no problem at all. There is either centeredness or lack of. If you are centered in the moment, I defy you to tell me when you are centered in the moment that there is a problem. But if you are in your mind, you are in future and you are in past, and there are the problems. But if you are in the moment, I defy you to tell me that there is a problem in this moment. But when you move out of moment into past, future, all of the horrors that your minds and your unconscious and your superconscious and all these wonderful words that you've made up are all there. And you hang on those two horns. And there is no peace from those two horns. There is only peace in the center. And I don't care what your life is. I don't care what anyone is doing to you. If you're in the moment, I defy you to tell me that there's anything but joy and upliftness and peace, if you are in that moment. Hard? Yes, certainly.
Being centered in that moment is equivalent to timelessness.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Because that's where you share of all of that knowingness of the timeless, the vastness, the oneness, all those wonderful words. Yes?
It seems to me that unaware of having to make that choice moment by moment.
Exactly.
And I know it seems a greater contrast now thinking in terms that don't exist, but before, I was not aware of being centered or not centered. Now I'm very much aware of being there and not being there. And a very great concept to me.
Yes, but isn't it wonderful? It's like being able to see black and white and then making a choice, whereas before it was all gray, and one could not decide whether to be in center or not because one didn't know. But now you know, and this is why they say, until you know, you're not accountable. But now that you know, you stand accountable. And not to any great God, but to your own self. Now you know. Now you know that if you stay in the moment, there is all of this peace and joy and quietude.
It's like a drug. You must have it. You must be in the center.
Good for you. I wish you all become drug addicts, if that is your definition. If a definition of a drug addict is one who is centered, then I wish it all upon you, and in great abundance, and ever-increasing abundance.
Addicted.
Yes. Well, I tell you, the divine is addictive. It truly is. It truly is. But you see, so is mind and body and desire addictive. So, you see, it's just a matter of getting your addictions all in line and seeing which you're most addicted to. You know, and when you push.
What about priorities? Your priorities for addictiveness, huh?
It's interesting. But I think it is a true statement. At one point, I think that you do see, truly, that you make the choice to fall into the chaos and the anxiety and the negativity. I think if you're watching, you see that. And you can say, I don't have to do this. There's another choice. But then your mind says, oh no, there isn't. We're going to go right back in, and then you're down in it again. But then if you're paying close attention, there is that instant that says choice. It could be different. I don't have to go into this. You know, it is like falling into, isn't it? You're standing there and somebody says something negative to you, and there is that instant of choice. You can either fall into what I consider old patterns and routine, mundane, gray, deadly water, or one can stand there and say, I don't have to fall into that. I'll stay here. It is your choice. And you say to me, it's an intellectual choice. At the beginning, you bet. At the beginning, you bet. But then I keep telling you, watch out. Watch out, because you go far enough, and then the addiction does come over you. And then you are lost. And how nice it is. But I do not, for a moment, underplay the reality of that time of choice. You know, I speak in many times in terms of there is a time, a wonderful time, when the power, if you wish to call it that, rises and claims you and then takes you, and you're, in a way, you're tumbling along the river, joyous and loose and free, and you've broken loose, if you see yourself as a lotus, say, growing from the bottom of a river. And the roots are torn up, and you now are in the river, and the river has taken you. But until that moment, there are all of the choices, and you choose each minute. Where will your identity lie? Where will your awareness sit? But do it enough, and then there is no choice. That's all I can say. It does end. Did you have a question?
Yes, because said in one of the states that we have a choice, rather, at the time of death, we have a chance of freedom.
Yes.
Could you comment on that?
All right. If in your lifetime something has been going on in your life that draws you within, and if for whatever reasons, and there are millions of them, the world keeps pulling you out, and then you keep trying, and if this dialogue within and without has gone on throughout most of your life, and if your yearning has been there, and the prayers have been spoken, and the heart has been aching, and you've just done the best that you possibly could, that yearning and that desire at the time of death, when you begin actually to move out of body form, I mean when actually that essence that you call yourself starts to move and expand out of and so forth, we won't go into all of that cosmology, out of the body form, there is that time when you see, you really see what is happening. And at that time, it is possible to say, take me. Take me. Not take me to Jesus of Nazareth. Take me to Buddha. Take me to my Uncle George. Take me to whatever. Not anything like that. But just a knowingness comes upon you, a chance for the total understanding of the illusory nature of your own mind projections. That's all it is. Because as you begin to move out of body, everything accelerates. Believe me, my friends, power is there at death. And do not underestimate the power of the moment of death. It is a fascinating, exciting, and dynamic time. And do not underestimate that power. And as it moves, and as you are moving into that experience, there is that chance. And many take it. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean they're totally free of the illusion? It means no. But it means this. It is a misunderstanding to think that this kindergarten is the only grade level possible in the universe. There are other grade levels possible in the universe. And when you have learned a certain amount, and when the freedom is, desire for freedom is strong enough, and when the heart is full enough of the yearning, and when there has been love, and do not underestimate that word, when there has been love given out in the life, then there are other realms of consciousness that are yours to go to. But I have told you before, and this is totally cosmological, and you cannot prove it until the moment of your death, there are certain levels of awareness that you cannot go to as long as you are judgmental, as long as you have hate and resentment. That is really all I can say. But to say that all of you have to become Buddhas and priests in order to not tread this earth plane is really not the truth. But to say that you can go to the realm of the Buddha without it is not true. In order to go to the realm of the Buddha, you have to have Buddha consciousness. And that's going to take a little longer. And why was he here? To help, to show, to guide, to explain, to be. Because if it were true that you all had to go that far, there would be many more of you awash on the earth plane than there are. It's simply a very difficult medium to work in. I hate to keep saying this to you because I know you love your earth so much, but it is a very difficult, it's not that the earth itself, it is all of this mind stuff that you have created, you know? It isn't the earth's fault that all of this mind stuff is awash around it. It would wish it other. So, are there any questions?
Are there not people living on the earth today who have a more or less detached feeling toward the earth?
Oh, lots. But detached, I think, in a wonderful sense.
Yes, I mean that.
Yes, detached in the sense of the wonder of what is so ultimately beautifully possible. The wonder of allowing Earth to speak for itself. You know, I've said a lot about that, and I mean this very, very sincerely. Those of you who consider yourself one with the earth, I would ask you to remember one thing overridingly. If you really want to be one with the earth, then you have to ask it what it wants instead of telling it what you want. Man has decided many things. And there is a wonderful way of changing that around. And if you are very good at it, you can go out to your plot of garden and you can sit there, provided there are no bugs, of course. And you can move into the very earth itself and say, well, what? You're going to be beans? It's going to be, I'm literally true about this. Is it going to be, what, potatoes? What is it? And then suddenly comes an awareness, well, let's try this. And you know, those of you who have these wonderful vegetables that just come up spontaneously, oftentimes, if you're paying attention, that's a good place to plant a similar item because something is happening there, you know. But man says that they are one with nature, and what that means is that I will stomp out into nature and I will start deciding what's going where and when and how much you know, that kind of a relationship, and that's not oneness in my understanding of oneness. That is still the superiority of the human intellect over the mundane earth. And it's, of course, your job, is it not, to control the earth, let it do what you want it to do. Look at a wonderful job humans have done to this planet. I think it's time to start asking some deep questions. What does the earth want from you? What is that moment of two-wayness that can create? And one of the reasons that there is yearning in so many of you to participate in some kind of country life rather than city life is for that very quality. Because there is a wonder that comes to someone who is able to move into the rhythms of nature as they are, and not complaining, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? I wanted this. Why aren't you doing that? You know, you have to accept it as it is. In the wonder and power of it as it is, do your best. And if something doesn't come to fruition, so what? So what? Maybe it was not what was wanted. Because you see, you have two powers at work, your own and that of whatever you're working with. And my friends, that is true of anything. And it is mostly true of working with human beings. And if I might say, this is the one area where I find again and again, you hurt each other again and yet again. You decide what is best for others. And then, if they don't like it, there's something wrong with them, because you know what's best for other, don't you? No, you don't. Other knows what's best for other, and you had better just allow it. Please, do not be so presumptive. You're presumptive with the land. You're presumptive with so many things, my friend. Please, do not continue that presumption with human beings. All you can say is, I want this from you. Now that's a fair statement. I want you to stop being so-and-so and start being thus-and-so. That's a statement. But to say, I know that you should be thus-and-so, that is not a true statement. And therein, on these simple turns of phrase, changes the meaning of your communication one to another. Simple turns of phrase. Watch your thought patterns, please. Watch them carefully, because therein lies the truth of your own manipulation of the world that you live in. Watch what you say. What you say is as much a part of you as anything else about you. Watch how you speak. Watch how you relate to different people. How do you relate to children? What do you say? What are you saying when you talk to your child? The very way that you speak says something about your understanding and your belief structure of parent-child relationships. Watch it. You may be operating on an unseen, unthought-of reaction pattern from your own youth that may not always be healthy for your own child, and may not even be something that you would willingly, consciously choose. Watch how you speak to people. Watch the different changes in your tone when an adult is there and when a child is there. And when the child is there, your voice is up here. And when an adult is here, you're down here. Watch what happens. What is this saying? Children can only hear this frequency? No, that's not what you mean. You see what I'm saying? Watch what you are saying. Because you are saying what you are constantly. And the only reason that that's important is not so that you will be myopically introspective, but because you will then begin to know who you are. And that's one of the best clues to know what's going on in your own mental apparatus, is what comes out of your mouth. How do you greet people? How do you speak to them? How do you speak? How do you relate? What is going on? And your speech tells you. Your speech tells you so much. Watch the repetitious patterns of your own, what are they called? Cliches. Is that a word? Yeah. Cliches. Your own cliches that go on and on. Watch what they are. And you'll understand what is now the operative, limiting concept that is binding you at that moment. And just be aware of it. And when different people are in your life, how does your speech pattern change? And don't tell me that it doesn't, my friend. Because it certainly does. It tells you a lot about how you feel. You will find it most in the male-female area. Watch the difference. I mean, not only does the voice change, but the body, the movements, everything changes. Watch what's going on. It's just as obvious to you if you only pay attention. I'm not asking for changes. I don't care what you do. I'm saying please know who you are. And one of the best guides to knowing who you are is to watch what's happening in your mouth and what comes out. I think it's the very wise woman that said, it doesn't matter so much what goes in, but it certainly matters what comes out. If you have to pay attention to your diet or to your words, please pay attention to your words. Please. Please. I think you will learn a great deal about your own limitations and how you limit others. If you find yourself using such words as shouldn't, you shouldn't do that, that's not right, that's not possible, well, you know, name them yourself. There's so many. What is that saying? You are saying again and again, I'm limited and so are you. And you say it to your children, you say it to your mates, to your friends, whoever. Watch. It only means you're reflecting a very limited world. And there are no limits, my friend. The limits are right here in your belief structure. And they can go at any time. Watch what you say. Many people say, well, I know people don't like me. I know people don't... All you're saying is, in my observation, people don't this and that. And most of the time, you know, if you believe it strongly enough, guess what? It starts coming back. And you say, there, I told you I was right all along. Nobody likes me. Well, hold any thought long enough and it's going to happen. That's not a true statement. Hold almost any thought long enough and it's bound to happen. The only time that would not be true is when a deeper part of you was overriding it with a counter-belief. And this is why I say you can know a lot about yourself by listening to what you say. Because you limit each other every day, every hour, every minute. You know, somebody's all fired up, they want to do something. Oh, well, I don't think it'll work. Do you understand? Over and over and over again, and it starts at a very young age. Mommy, I'm going to build a sandcastle. Oh, I don't think you can. The sand's too dry. Let him go. He'll find out soon enough, and he'll start getting water and bring it, so it'll work. There's all kinds of things. And so what's wrong with learning you can't build a sandcastle? Allow people, please, allow each other their own experience. Don't jump in and say this and that. You know, you just may be wrong. And even if you're right, please, leave them alone. I think that one of the basic problems in the human world is you're a bunch of humbugs to each other. You really are humbugs to each other. You go around, telling, do this, do that. And even if you don't use your mouth, your very attitude, somebody says that, oh, I'm going to do this. Silence. Not a word of support. Wow. Sounds chancy. Hope it works. Great. Can I help? Do you hear that? No. Just... And when you hear that silence, you know, uh-oh. This person doesn't have to say a word, but I know just what they think. Watch what you do, my friend. You know, it is a true statement, the sky's the limit. In fact, it's not even true because even past the sky's the limit. And you've only begun. You've only begun, and your mind's limit, limit, limit. You limit yourselves, you limit your friends, your lovers, your husbands, your wives, your children, your boss, your employees, everybody. You're just one mass of limitations. Open it up! Be daring! So you fail. What does that mean, to fail? That means that something you tried doesn't turn out the way your mind predicted? Well, what about the excitement of the spontaneity of doing something? Is that failing? I don't think so. You're so end-oriented that you forget that the wonder is the doing. The wonder is the spontaneous doing of it. So what if it doesn't turn out to look like a sandcastle? It's a big mound. What does it matter? Unless your mind says, well, it doesn't look like a sandcastle, therefore I failed. And you know, as it is in children, so it is in adults. And so it is in the realm of relationships. I've said this before and I must repeat. Because a relationship does not last for 80 years does not mean it was a failure. A relationship that's dynamic, wonderful, extending and uplifting can last for, what, 24 hours? 2 years? 5 years? 10 years? It doesn't have to last 80 years to be dynamic. And I would ask all of you to ponder that deeply, because I think that you are very much caught. Those of you who are listening to this tape and who might be in this room who have lost children, I repeat that. Just because the child is not here in body form does not mean for one moment that the wonderful value of the relationship was not totally and wondrously special, unique, and worthwhile. Do not be end-oriented, my friend. Do not. Because, you know, some of the most wonderful moments of your life are short moments. Do not demand that they extend on for 25 years. You know, even the most dynamic moment extended for 24 years is going to be a big bore. No matter how dynamic it is, it will be boring after 24 years. I promise you. I promise you. So experience it and let it go and move on to the next dynamic moment. You travel along with these long trails of expectation. The next moment's got to be like the one I remember, January 22nd at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and you keep yearning for the same thing, and under your very nose is something much more exciting. And I say this frankly and utterly to any of you who are what are called on your earth plane, discarded lovers. Is that a good term? discarded lovers. All right. One of the main reasons that people do not have dynamic interrelationships with friends or with lovers or whatever is because they have cast themselves in their mind as a discarded lover. And a discarded lover isn't worth anything, right? Everybody knows that. And you have forgotten something. In this instance, you are not a discarded lover. In this instance, you are what you are. And it has nothing to do with the last moment of being a discarded lover. Unless you so choose to pick up that title and carry it with you into this moment, and then, yes, indeed, guess what? You are a discarded lover. That is a mind construct, and I tell you, it is not worthwhile. But I also tell you this. If you keep repeating that long enough in your mind, you are going to continually see yourself in that framework, and you will not allow yourself to move from discarded lover to dynamic friend. Be aware of this, my friend. You bring it with you, the garbage of the moment that you think you failed in. You trail with you into this moment, and it limits you. Where do you see in this room a discarded lover? Is there a label that you wear upon your chest with a radiant glow? But you might as well be doing it, because you are putting out this understanding of yourself all of the time. And watch your mouth. Watch what you say about yourself. Watch. So, I just thought I'd throw that in, because a lot of people come to me with the misunderstanding that they are discarded lovers. And to tell you the truth, I have never, in all of my dealings, ever seen one. It is like the mythical beast that no one has seen. I have never seen one. Never. I have only seen two people whose energy fields no longer mesh, and for whatever reason, they have chosen to move in another direction. To me, that is dynamic. To you, that is embarrassing. And I say, forget the embarrassment. Forget it. Drop it. It has no meaning to me. Life is an ever-creative, ever-extending power. Do not bring your old baggage into this moment. In the last moment, you were a parent that lost a child. In this moment, you are a brother or a sister to someone who's now having a new experience of understanding. How do you see it? It's in your mind. Easy? No, I'm not saying it's easy. Possible? Oh, yes. Very possible. Do it now or do it later. Are there any questions? Would you come closer to the mic, please?
Yeah. Last night we went to a movie, and in it portrayed some horrible events of a war, Vietnam, that we were entered in, the United States entered into. And there were a lot of atrocious things that happened in that war. I wonder, do we, as a nation, gain karma on these things?
These two people keep coming and keep asking these questions. This is the wife of the gentleman that asked the other. I would be lying to deny it. There is such a thing as a national karma. There is such a thing as a world karma. And I think that it is unfortunate that more people are not aware of that. And this is why I have to always say to you, when you look on atrocities that your nation perpetuates in other parts of the world or in your own nation, and you somehow set yourself up as not a part of that, that is a deceptive perception. Because the truth of the situation is that just as there are racial karmas, planetary karmas, there are country karmas. You have chosen a direct choice to participate in, when you choose to come to a life, to participate in and become a part of a certain strain of mental thought imagery, action, reaction, and so forth. This is a choice that you make. And the minute that you take form in that, you carry your own part in it and your own responsibility. Any nation that performs atrocities must be ready to have the same done to them at some time in that nation's life. Whether it will come now or come in another round of created time, I cannot speak. But it is the truth.
What can we do as individuals?
The same answer always, good evening. The same answer always must come. It is my firm belief, if I may use that word, that as many of you in any nation that are trying your best to be centered, clear, dynamic, and creative within, that amount of creative extendedness goes out into the world, your own country, and helps in whatever way to work with the balance. That's all I can ever say. If some of you want to go over to Vietnam and try and undo things, fine. I have no objection. But I repeat, that is not the only possibility. This is all done with the mind, my friends. And if you can use your own ability to center and give out dynamic energy, that is also a part of this nation's karma. You see, it isn't all negative. It is simply that there is the negative and then there is the positive. And whatever amount you contribute, that amount is your responsibility. And as you know, I feel that the highest good you can do for yourself, for your family, for your nation, for the world, for the universe, how far do you want me to go, however far you can go, is to do your best to be centered, dynamic, extending from your center, and let the gods take care of it. You don't have to worry about Vietnam if you are doing your utmost to stay clear, centered, and aware in your moment. That is the only ultimate maximum answer that I see. Of course there are those that are drawn to go and participate and do other things, of course, and by all means, whoever wants to do it, that would be their destiny. But that is not the only thing. You don't have to throw up your hands and say, well, I can't do anything, so I'll forget about it. Well, I don't suggest you worry about it, but I do suggest that you get within your being and use that awareness, because it does make a difference. Does that answer? Are there other questions?
I've been reading the Tao recently, and in there they made a statement, which I've heard others make, that cause are not real.
Cause and effect are not real?
Yeah, that they that there isn't such a thing as cause and effect. Now, when you're talking now, it sounds like there really is.
As long as your mind has so constructed time, events are going to jump in your mind from one event to another, to another, to another. If you were asking me if karma is real, I would say, of course not. But to say, in answer to this woman's question, that karma and that Vietnam and all of that horror is not real, is not to answer the substance of her question, which is, do you as a nation have an energy field that moves out and affects others and therefore gets a response? And that is a true statement. To say that cause and effect is not real is, of course, the truth. Absolutely. Cause and effect are not, they are not even real because there are no such thing. What you're seeing is an unrelated series of events that you cause, that you say is cause and effect. And even in that limited sense, I say it's utterly unreal. You say that A causes B, and I say to you, this is a very naive and limited understanding, because the fact is, if we would just take the limits of this room, each one of you is cause and effect, if we're going to use those words, right now. Don't you understand that all of you are the so-called cause of what I'm saying? Not just one of you, but the conglomerate of the energy that is in this room, the movement in this room, brings forth out of this vehicle a certain response. If there were other people in here, their response would be different. So it is on one level true to say that you're, the reason that I speak thus is because you are here. This particular number, this particular group is here. Therefore, it calls up a certain response. All right. Ultimately, there's nothing but movement. It seems to you that things move from one thing to another because your mind has closed out the otherness of it, and you have only paid attention to one event moving to another, moving to another. Now, as you know yourself, in the deep meditated state, those boundaries are transcendent, and cause and effect are blithering idiot words, and that is the ultimate truth, absolutely the truth. But I cannot respond to a limited question with an eternal answer. But in answer to the eternal, absolutely no cause and effect. And you can find it out.
Well, you see, I plainly believe there is cause and effect.
I understand that, my dear friend, but you won't forever.
I won't.
You will not forever believe that.
But
it is true.
And it bothers me when I see it, because I'm reading it in someone who I believe in, you know. It drives me to really believe what he says.
And you have reason to, because it is a true statement. But let me just simply say, as long as you were caught in the machinations of the game of being an earthling, there has to be a transcendence of that game in order to see that, and it will break, and then you will see, really, it is only one event after, there is even no connectedness. But to say that to you is the same difficulty as I have with time, because they are interwoven, very intermeshed. You understand, cause and effect and time. You cannot have cause and effect if you don't have time, can you? How are you going to have cause and effect if there's no time? And then I make outrageous statements like, all of your incarnations are being lived at the same time. And you say, do not talk that way, you're going to bust my brain. And you will run. And but it is ultimately the truth. All of your incarnations, on one level, are being lived right now. Right now, in this moment of whatever you want to call it. But to talk that way, whoa, gaseous, people cannot really grasp. But it is the truth. There is no cause and effect. There is no time. True statement. But you see my problem. I'm trying to take the limitless and place it in a form that is meaningful, so you can work with it. It's no good to say, no time. Well, you understand my problem. But what to do? Nothing. Just stay aware. Just stay within. Just stay centered. And pretty soon they start to drop. They drop. They drop. And things expand and move on. And, well, you'll see. Some of you already know much of what I'm talking about. Have we gone on long enough?
No, one more time.
Any more questions? I'll have to quit yelling so loud. Yes.
I was at the spiritual retreat recently, and I heard something very interesting, which has to do with, again, the time of death. If we could turn the head of this departed one to the right side and put it in the right hand, in the next incarnation, that person would have recollection of all knowledge accumulated. Could be very interesting.
Believe it.
Sounds
nice.
Well, it could explain musicians starting to play at 4 years of age and that sort of thing.
May I answer your question without directly answering your question?
All right.
It is my policy to never make any kind of statement about a statement that I might not totally agree with. So instead of responding negatively, if I could perhaps respond positively, which is the last part, how about the child that at age four?
Mm-hmm.
May I take it from that aspect? But about this other business, go ahead and do it. It's fine. I can only say I have no personal knowledge that that would work, but why not try it? And if it did, wonderful. But I have no direct knowledge of that. That does not mean it is not, possible.
Yeah,
it means
sandcastle.
Right. I have no understanding of that, but that doesn't mean it isn't a reality for someone. But what about the child at four? There is a statement in the, I believe it's the American Creed, perhaps other nations have it too, that all men are created equal. Is that a true statement of your country? Well, with all due respect to the people who built that statement, it is not entirely true.
Okay.
Not entirely. And this for this reason. A four-year-old child who finds himself, and this is a boy, I suppose, performing this wondrous creation has what you could perhaps in the vernacular call a pipeline to the source. And pipelines to the source are built. And it is just a simple, unavoidable reality that some physical entities have a closer touch to the essence when they come in than others. You say it is because they have worked on themselves in past lifetimes. You can use all of these words, and sometimes that's true, and sometimes it's not true. Would you like to turn on the cooler? Is this a time, an appropriate time, sir? Good. I think it's very hot. It is a limited belief that the only way that an entity can enter the earth plane into a higher state of awareness is through a cycle of reincarnation. That is an idea I see awash in many people's minds. It is not important, but it isn't true. It simply isn't true. The fact is, again, this tape, my friend, is totally facial tonight. The fact is that there are many, many people who choose, who have a higher state of awareness, who choose, if I might put it this way, to try the earth life. And after one lifetime, they may decide it isn't for them. It is a great mistake to think in terms of having to start something and then just rolling along without any way out ever, 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 amen. And this is how I see many people feeling about this earth existence. And the fact is that there are options. It's just like you don't have to live in one township all of your life. You can make certain adjustments. You can move from house to house or city to city or country to country. And I suppose pretty soon world to world, Don't think that that you're the only things that can move. Other things can move. Other so-called, what should we call them, entities can choose to come and so forth. So don't be locked in, please, in your mind to any pattern. But the fact is that certain ones who are very dynamically creative at a very young age are ones who, for one reason or another, have a vaster access to the source, wherein lies the wondrous chance, the wondrous, what can I call them, possibilities that could be brought into form. The rarefied mind stuff. The rarefied mind stuff that is awash in the clearer aspects of consciousness. There are clearer aspects of mind stuff which have within them some wondrous capabilities and possibilities. And when they're brought down into form, you know, it's oftentimes that the same thing happens on various parts of the globe at the same time. All that means is that various people, one of them is moving, everything moves, and people just pull it down and put it into form. Now that happens with the negative aspects too. If you're going to the lower, less clear aspects of the astral, well, that's what you're going to pull down. So, unfortunately, there are just certain children who come in with a certain capability for certain things, and it's simply the way of it. Does that answer the question?
Thank you. Then this has nothing to do with the fact that maybe the soul of that child may have learned these lessons in previous lives.
That's one possibility.
It is one possibility.
It is a possibility that in the past incarnation, the so-called, there we're talking nonsense again. Oh dear. But anyway, it is a possibility that a so-called past incarnation, this so-called separate entity, has been a musician and so forth. That's one possibility, but that is not always the answer. That is the one that most people readily assume, but it is not necessarily. You, for example, could have been a very open soul on a very deep level as a monk, for example, and come back and choose, no, none of that this time. I'm going to be a dynamic business person. I'm going to see how that works. But you still have your pipeline that you've built, so out come some of the most wonderful ideas that enter into the business at hand. There you get the people who are the wonderful innovators of creative this and that, you know, machines and whatever. You see, there are, again, we have to say, my friends, there are no rules. Those are rules you make up. You make up rules on the earth plane, and then you make up rules for the afterlife and the before life and the in-between life, and endlessly you make up rules, and they're all humbug. The only way that you can know is what is your experience, and that is what I ask you to find out. What is your experience? What is your experience? Know that, and you know all you need to know. Period. We always go back to the basic statement. What do you need to know? Don't worry about future pasts and lives and incarnations and kings and where you were. So many queens awash on the earth plane and all, you know, Nefertitis and so on, all of these things. Wonderful. I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. But the fact is that if you happen to have been Nefertiti, what difference does it make to you now? If you are not that now, what possible difference does it make to you? So, stay with what you know. Do not let people get you enamored and glamored with your past so that you can just absolutely avoid looking at the present. And not just the present life, but the present moment. Hone down your awareness so tightly that there is only one moment, and it is the moment that is before you. Right there. Unswerving. That's the only moment I ask you to put your awareness on. All the rest, my friends, is illusion. Some substance, was there a Nefertiti? No doubt. Were you Nefertiti? Perhaps. But if it doesn't do anything for you in this instant, then what is your concern? It is just another wonderful glamour. You know, it's all glamour, my friends, going backwards, trying to find out who you were and so on. If there is something that is imperative in this lifetime that you know, you will know it. What you need will be there. Either through a meditation, through a dream, through some silly psychic, something of this nature. Something will happen. I include myself in that room. Hear me clearly. If you need to know it, somebody will come and tell it to you. Hear it. If it has meaning, use it or drop it. But do not pull it forward with glamour. I was a this, I was a that, this, please. I see it all the time. It's a lot of fun, no doubt.
Is it true that then that in the moment, if all incarnations are occurring at once, and I don't mean to...
Go ahead.
If all incarnations are occurring now, then in this moment, are there not other things that are affecting us and other incarnations that perhaps, if we're aware of, will help us?
Of course, it's all here. Where is it going to go? You say, my last incarnation, where is it? Is it down the road? Is it down the street? Is it where? Where is your last incarnation? Where is it? Have you ever thought about that? Where are your last incarnations? So somewhere awash in the universe? Is that where they are? I don't think so. I don't think so. I will end this soon because I know this is difficult with the heat. But this is a good and pertinent question. Where are your past lifetimes? If a psychic can sit there and babble to you about a past life, then where is it? Has she or he left and gone to some rare country and come back and is prattling? No, she's looking or he's looking right at you and he says, ah, I see, and that's himself. Well, where is it? What is he reading? He's reading what is before him and what is before you. He's reading what is right here, now. It isn't any place else. If you need to know about a past lifetime and you are sitting in meditation, boom, it will be there. You will either feel it or you will see it. And if you see it and you get scared, it will, you know, all these things happen. They happen all the time. You say, oh, it's just illusion, so I'm all fine. But out of it comes some understanding. Out of it comes some understanding. I will share one that happened to the woman to give you an instance of how it can happen. She was sitting in meditation, and she saw herself as a Celanese monk about to die, bones aching, skinny, dirty, starving, hungry, and this wonderful golden Buddha, and she's sitting there with a he at that time. And the last thought before he died was, it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't work. Now why, of all the possibles, did that come to her? To show her clearly that the path of the renunciate, austere, removed, starved unto death, didn't work. It did not work. Because you see, through it all, she sensed, at the last moment, she still sensed her ego pushing for it, pushing, pushing, and she saw it. She, now, in this lifetime, saw it. So why is that useful? It's taught her something. She will not be free until she drops that pushing. And in her deep moment, she understands. And it helps her. You understand? It helps her. Not to make her feel glamorous about being an emaciated, starving monk, but because at the last moment, the truth went through that mind. It didn't work. Something was wrong. Something. And came the knowledge of what it was. No surrender. No surrender. Still, the austere, renunciate monk. It must come. It must come. Now, now. And she felt it. And she saw it. And she knew. So, if it can happen to her, you can be sure that it can happen to you. Absolutely no difference. And don't you dare think it is different than that. There's no speciality here at all. But it does take meditation. I always have to return to this. Those of you who say, nothing happens, I say, please, please, look to your life. How much do you meditate? How much do you sit in quiet awareness? Even in the midst of work, how often, how often, how often? I ask you, please. The answers surround you, pulsate and beat upon you. You either listen or you don't. So, I've ranted and raved quite long enough. Yeah, my voice is going. I thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lord.